Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. Today's guest has over 20 years of experience performing over 350 shows a year. He has entertained over a million people with his unique cutting-edge programs. He is a four-time winner of the Greater Atlanta Magician of the Year Award. In addition, he has also been featured on CNN Headline News, where he headlined their segment on A Day of Magic. He performs annually in Hollywood, California at the world-famous Magic Castle. Our guest has also performed five times at the White House and appeared on ABC's America's Funniest Home Videos. Along with performing, he travels around the world teaching other entertainers his original ideas and routines. We're excited today to have on the Curious Performer, the amazing Ken Scott. Ken, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, so excited to have you here. I'm just had a great weekend hanging out with you and several people at CAX. You guys did an incredible job with that.
Yeah, CAX. That was, it's, you know, these virtual conventions obviously are not what we want to do, but they're a good thing to kind of have in place since we can't really meet in person right now. But I thought it was pretty close to being in person with our Zoom stuff and then things on Facebook. I actually took a lot of things away from CAX myself as far as learning some stuff. So that's always a win-win.
Yeah, I think for what you said, for it being virtual, it was as close to being there as you could be. Amazing job by the tech guys and going back and forth with the entertainers. You really felt like you were at a convention for the most part. It was a great job.
Yeah, I agree. But I can't wait to get back in person. Man, those are going to be the days, right?
Exactly. Well, hey, I am excited to get to talk to you. We're going to ask you some questions, and we're going to try and have a conversation with Ken today, find out a little bit more about him. Let's start with Ken. How did you get involved in performing as your profession?
Yes, I mean, obviously, it's probably no different than any other story. I got a magic book from my mom when I was 8. And that kind of started the magic bug. And then I kind of got into sports and magic kind of got it put back on the back burner. And then I realized that I was not going to be a Major League Baseball player and got back into magic. But then I went to college for broadcasting and got out of school and went right into a pretty big radio station here in Atlanta and worked for them and, you know, made, I'd say, $10,000 a year and thought that was the greatest thing in the world. And, only to be one of seven guys laid off by some interns that came in and took our jobs as interns. And the intern that happened to take my job at the time was a guy no one probably knows. His name's Ryan Seacrest. And he came in as a high school intern and took my job. And look where he's at now. Yeah. Damn. So then I realized that making the $10,000 a year just wasn't going to cut it. So that's when I got back into magic and where I make $5,000 a year now. So I'm going the opposite direction. I got into magic after I got left the radio days and I learned a lot during those 2 years I was at the radio station, but I love performing. I mean, I'm not having to rent theater space. I can go into someone's home and basically they hire me to do a birthday party or go into a library. And so there are some advantages of being a family show performer where some guys are really having to sweat it out and hope they sell tickets to a theater show and stuff, which, you know, these guys are doing well, but it's a stress I don't want. So
true. What about when you made that jump from being in the radio station, a guaranteed salary, all that kind of stuff, and you made that jump to, okay, I'm going to be on my own, I'm going to do this magic thing, early struggles, stories about that?
Yeah, I mean, they're still struggles. I think back in those days, I was, you know, I was only 20, 22, 23, and so the $10,005 was, you know, I didn't know how much money that really was. And I think I, at that time at 22, was still living with my mom. So, so I wasn't too much of a loss. I wasn't paying a lot on other bills and stuff, but yeah, I mean, there was definitely I think magic, or at least what we're doing as far as full time, you're forever learning, Max. I think the time you become, you know, just stand still and not changing things is when people catch up with you, or you kind of get, you start to get passed by other people that are doing other things. So I sometimes tend to procrastinate on things. That's one of my pitfalls in performing, is procrastinating, waiting to the very last minute on doing things. But I like changing the things. You got to change things in this industry. I think if you don't, you're going to just, you know, like I said, you're not going to be in the game too long.
Mm-hmm. What about early on a mentor? Did you have somebody that what kind of spoke into your life or gave you some direction to do this, to do it the way you're doing it today?
You know, there were several, but one particular person that stands out is a guy named J.C. Doty. J.C. Doty was a person who helped build the Tomfoolery, Tom Mullica's bar here in Atlanta. And J.C. Doty was a silent but very powerful man who could speak the language and would make sure that you're going down the right trail and not going down the wrong trail, following the right people. And he just had a good sense of eye for comedy. And he wasn't a performer per se himself, but he knew what things were funny and what weren't. So he would be quite honest with me if things didn't work out, or he'd give me some good suggestions on things. But yeah, J.C. Doty was one. Yeah, I mean, you know, and early on in my days, I worked for Daytona Magic when I was 12 years old up until I was 17. Mm-hmm. So I would work for them every summer. And I learned a lot from working in a magic shop as well, just traveling and getting to go to conventions and work in a magic shop. So that was a good learning experience too. So
now, if somebody in today's world were to say, "Hey, Ken, I'm really thinking about taking this on as my profession," what would be your advice to them?
Well, I would say, do you have an idea what you want to do? Is there a way that you can go in it part time first? And do you have something else to fall back on? I hate to bring up the obvious what we're in right now during this pandemic as this recording's going on, but you know, mm-hmm. we're in a pandemic with COVID, and as of March 12th last year of 2020, I was hitting all cylinders, and to come off a school show stage and look at your phone and notice that every gig you had is now canceling was quite frightening. So and do I have a backup plan? And I didn't really have a backup plan. I mean, I was doing pretty well. So, you know, it was learning new things and having to learn how to build a studio out so I can do virtual stuff. Again, it goes back to that procrastination thing. I wanted to build a studio out forever, but I never did do it until I actually had to do it. Mm. So my suggestion is make sure you've got a show. Make sure you've got the smarts to do it. The old saying is it is show business. You got to know the show and you got to know the business. What comes first, the business or the show? If your show is no good, then you're not going to get the business. You may get that one gig, but you've got to have both things in mind. You got to be a good business person and a good showman.
Let's step into that a little bit. You've talked about the studio and creating a studio, and I've seen some of the clips that you've done with that. Kind of walk us through how that works for you.
As far as building it out?
Yeah, building it out. And then what kind of, you know, it's definitely a different thing performing in front of a sure. camera than performing in front of a live audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's so early on when this all happened, I have a dear friend of mine I've known since the early 90s named Monty Johnson, who's actually in production. He was an amateur magician, but he does production work for like big concerts. Like he was on Jerry Seinfeld's comedy tour for a couple years. And this year he's supposed to be doing Kevin Hart's comedy tour, and that got postponed. So Monty had some time on his hands. So he was able to come over to my house and help me build out my studio with some stuff that I had and some stuff that he had. And we was able to make it go, you know, put up the studio pretty fast. But, you know, building the studio out, it's been piece by piece learning things because like Monty would tell me, he goes, you know, you've learned so much in 10 months that it would take people 10 years to learn. You know, people like, you know, that are building these studios out and doing these virtual things, it's, we are learning at a very fast pace where some people have taken decades to learn this stuff. So that is something to say. And as far as the show, I mean, it's just getting used to this rectangle box that we have to stare at now, this square that's this rectangle looking back at us, and learning and knowing someone is on the other side of that little bitty box watching you. For me, I put a picture of my mom just right above the camera, so I know that I can see a smiling face looking back at me, because it is kind of lonely when you're doing like a Zoom show and everyone's muted. You don't know if you're getting that constant, you know, you know, gratification, people liking your show, liking a live show. But so there is that knowing that, are they liking this? It's so quiet, you know? So I'd say I'm still learning at it. It's still just the tech part of it. I'm still learning at it.
Yeah. And now I've seen, like I said, a few of your clips. And then do you have a favorite or a couple of favorites that, hey, man, this is something I know is going to work for an audience that's watching on Zoom?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's material that I'm doing in my shows that I never would have bought otherwise. It just plays for TV. For instance, Cartoon Deck. Back in the days when I used to do strolling, I would do that sparingly just because it was so hard to see unless you're really one-on-one with a person. They could see the, you know, the little cartoon guy go on the deck, and it was such a hard trick to play for people, in my opinion. But for TV, it's perfect. I mean, you could put a camera on it and they can see everything, detail, him going into the hat, reach into the hat, pulling the card out. So that's an example that really, really plays well to the camera. You know, then I'm doing videos a lot now. I'm recording like 15, 20 second videos of tricks that I can post on my Instagram and my social media pages. Again, tricks I never would have done otherwise, but hey, now I, again, this goes back to the procrastination that I didn't do enough with my social media to begin with. Now I'm trying to make a better effort to putting some content up there so people can see it. And, you know, the idea is that I want to be on top of mind when we get out the other side of this pandemic is what I'm hoping.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen some of those clips, and I've seen, you also have a product page, and some of those things are on there. What's the address for that, Ken?
Ah, thanks for the plug there, Keith. No, it's KenScottProducts.com, KenScottProducts.com. And what I try to do, anything I put on my page that I sell to magicians, because I don't lecture a lot. I don't have a huge magic shop. I've got some things I carry. I lecture from time to time. But anything that's on there, you can guarantee that it's in my show. I don't just put it on there if I'm not doing it. So that's the good thing about it, that if I'm kind of putting my name behind it, you know that it's been in my show, tested in front of, you know, family audiences. So know that it's not just some stuff I found and trying to sell it.
And I can attest to that. I have several of Ken's products. One that you can't really use today is the Fantasy Magician, a crowd favorite. But
yeah, it's got to wait a little while, I think, probably. But I think all that stuff will come back. I think when the doors open up, a slow process it may be, I think the audiences are going to be there. I think they're going to want us more than ever when we go back, just because they're going to want that live interaction as well. I think, you know, we're missing the handshakes. We're missing the hugs. We're missing that connection. Humans weren't supposed to be put into a basement, you know, for months on end. So I think it's going to be a good day when we go back to doing live shows again.
Yeah, I totally agree. And honestly, I haven't done any of the virtual shows for us. It's just a decision we made early on to say, I'm not going to do that. But after CAX, one of the things that I am going to do, based on what you talked about and what I saw, is set up enough of a studio to do those little clips you're talking about for social media.
Right.
I think there's huge advantage to that.
Absolutely. You know, and I was, like I told in my lecture, that I've taped many of my clips just off my iPhone. The iPhone is just a good enough, I mean, in some cases, a better camera than these high-end cameras. And that I use that camera a lot, just taping some quick bits when I'm out and about. I don't have my big camera with me. I can just use this iPhone. So don't think you got to get some big expensive camera, although an iPhone's not cheap. So
that is true. Very true. What about, we've mentioned social media a couple of times. What platforms are you on? What do you see to be the most advantageous for you to use? How are you using it?
Well, Keith, I mean, MySpace is just kicking it, man. I mean, you know, I'm on there and I'm like, someone's going to be here any moment. And it's lonely over there, buddy. It's lonely. But no, I'm like anybody. I'm using Facebook, as my kids say, that's for grandparents. Are for old people, but I'm on it because the people that book me for shows, the parents are on it. So it's not so much that the kids see me on there. It's the parents see me on there who are going to be the ultimate one that books me for a school show or a corporate show or, you know, their own kid's birthday party. I'm also kind of, I'm new, I would say within the last year and a half on Instagram. I'm not doing much Twitter. I just think Twitter to me is for really famous people, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've got a Twitter account. I just don't use it because I don't think that my clients are there. I could be wrong. I don't know enough about Twitter. But right now, it's just Instagram and Facebook. And like I said, I just post videos, post some things on there that I think would be interesting that my people that follow me on there will like.
Yeah, I agree with the Facebook thing because my kids say the same thing. That's for old people. Well, I am an old people, and old people pay most of my bills. So
that's right. That's right.
Works for me.
Yeah, you know. And I like posting some unique things on there and putting a trick or two on there and not overwhelming it and keeping it pretty fresh on there. And I think putting these tricks that come along and I'm able to record it pretty quickly. That's been neat because before I would have to go set the camera up. I would have to go shoot it, then edit it. Mm-hmm. So I think having the studio is kind of a, you know, I can shoot this thing right now and have it edited in 15 minutes and up and running within 20. So it's there's some good things about having a studio up and running and not having to tear it down.
Sure, sure. What about branding? What you're branded as Ken Scott. Everybody knows you by right. your name. I mean, that's a had to be a choice you made on the front end to say, this is who I'm going to be.
Yeah. When you know, you're good at that too, Keith. I've always seen your branding. You've got some great branding too. You know, the Ken Scott goes back to when I worked at Daytona Magic. Ken Scott is, you know, Ken is my first name. Scott's my middle name. And Weisenbaker is my last name. Well, growing up in a, you know, my parents were divorced, but I live with my mom and I'd play baseball. And when I played baseball, it was the joke was I was always just Ken because Weisenbaker would not fit on my jersey. And she would say, it's 75 cents a letter. So you're just going to be Ken. So that the Weisenbaker was cut off. But I remember going to a convention back in 83 with Daytona Magic and Harry Allen. We were doing registration. And he goes, what's your middle name? I go, Scott. He goes, all right, you're going to be Ken Scott. You're not going to be Weisenbaker. I said, whatever. So it was at that moment I became Ken Scott. And, you know, when I do shows today, I make such a big deal about the kids don't call me Mr. Ken. They don't call me Mr. Scott. They call me Ken Scott. They don't call me Ken. They just call me Ken Scott. It's like it just runs together, Ken Scott. And my belief is that when I do a show, because I've got three daughters and they're old, you know, they're older now. Some two are in their 20s and one's in their late teens. But when they were younger, they would go to birthday parties and my wife would say, hey, we saw a magician, we saw a clown, and I said, who was it? And they never could tell me who it was. So I've always, gosh, back when I worked in the radio days, I knew how important branding is, just, you know, watching how a radio station works. Well, I make sure that if I'm at a show, they're going to know my name, whether that show is awful or whether it's good. They're going to leave knowing my name. And that's very important with it all the way down to my sign on my front of my table. It's got Ken Scott on it. The way I have an introduction done by a voiceover at the beginning of my shows. And also just when I bring kids or people to help me in the show, I always reintroduce myself. And by the end of the show, the kids say, we know you're Ken Scott. So it's almost becomes like a running joke. But I believe a lot about the logos, having a good logo that kind of says you. I see a lot of guys that have logos that doesn't speak much about their shows. So unless the logo kind of looks like you and feels like your show, it's got to talk like your show does. So the logo has a lot to do with, I think, today. I mean, it's just, I've had a logo for a long time. I've just changed it the last year because I wanted to make a change. The other one was probably 12 years old. So it was time to make a change on logos, but mm-hmm. Yeah, branding's important. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that about your show. That's probably one of the things I'm worst at is self-promotion during the show. I just really need to be more conscious of saying my name, having the kids say my name. And I think that when you do that well, I've seen some of your shows on video and you're right. I mean, the kids know who you are by the end of the show. And yeah. I think that's huge, huge.
Important. You know, and also just cross-promoting yourself too is an important thing. Like I think you can do it either in a fun way. You know, some guys do it, you know, and be obnoxious about it. And parents kind of, you know, are turned off by it, but you can do it in a fun way. You know, if I'm at let's say a mall, or if I'm at an event, that's large crowd. A lot of times it's a showcase for me to get these moms to book me for birthdays. And I could say something like, if I bring out the egg bag, I could say to the kid that helps me, I go, hey, you know, I did this 2 weeks at a birthday party and you should have seen her face. So now I've planted the seed that, oh, he does do birthday parties. Because sometimes when you do these big events, be it a mall or be it an outside festival or something, and there's hundreds of people, sometimes parents don't think about you doing the small things like a small kid's birthday party. So I like trying to cross promote, but not making it seem like it. Then sometimes I do it with it very obvious. For example, birthday parties. There's only one person that gets to hold the bunny rabbit, and that's the birthday child. The birthday child helps me six times before anyone else helps me in the show. And the birthday kid comes up, excuse me, sits back down. And as soon as their bottom hits the floor, I go, I need a helper. And I bring it right back up. And the kids go, that's not fair. And then I usually say, I'll come to your party next. So that's just a little thing that the kids go, yes, I want you at my birthday party because I want to do all this cool stuff that, you know, Zachary's doing. So.
Yeah, that's so true. Kids are, you know, I just did a party 2 weeks ago, and every kid after the show are up there telling me the date of their birthday party.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, be sure you tell your mom.
Yeah, and then I always put a card in their hand.
Yeah.
Or a huge dollar bill in their hand. I go, hey, just have them call this number, and you'll talk to my special magic agent, and they'll set it up for you.
Yeah, kids are so funny, but they are.
The kids have got to like you. If not, then you'll just be forgotten once the cake is served.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right. What about success? You know, for different people, it means different things, but what would you describe as a critical element of success for a performer?
Are you paying the bills? Are you, I mean, that's, you know, are your bills being paid? You know, I have to say being a family show performer, and I, you know, I've been in magic for a long time, and I know I have a lot of dear friends that are, you know, big names in magic, and I know a lot of guys who are doing some much bigger, larger things. But when I look at the grand scheme of things, I see these guys that some people are really suffering and not living the lifestyle that one would think. But I'm just doing family shows, and I'm doing pretty good. I'm not bragging by no means, but I've for almost 20 years, I've lived pretty comfortably in a nice house and raised my girls in a nice place, a good subdivision. And I think that's why I don't try to hide the fact that I'm a family show performer. I don't try to sit there and go, oh, I'm a corporate show, but then you know, I'm out doing birthdays. I don't hide the fact that I do that because I'm succeeding where others aren't as far as these big guys that are out doing supposedly corporate stuff. But again, I think success is dependent on the individual. You know, what my success is may not be somebody else's success. So I can't tell somebody else how to be successful or what they think might be successful. I know what for me is, and that's, you know, living pretty comfortably and you know, having my calendar full, which right now it's scary.
Yeah, we're looking forward to summer to hurry up and get here our house. But, you know, and that's something I did not realize when I first, because I've only been doing this full time now 4 or 5 years. But I thought everybody that spoke at any convention or anything like that was doing this full time and just killing it. Yeah. But the longer you're in that, the more you find out that's just not the truth of the matter.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's with any business. It's not just magic. I think that's with any industry you're in. There's some businesses that you see that you think are like, oh, they must be just making it. I mean, for instance, restaurant. Mm-hmm. I've always thought people that own a restaurant are just like making money hand over fist. And even before the pandemic, they're not making it. They were struggling working 19 hours a day at the restaurant. I mean, so we think, you know, so again, success is built up in our in people's heads that we think, oh, they're so successful. They must be doing, you know, huge. And sometimes they're not. I think it's just success depends on the individual, I think.
Sure. What about, you know, we just finished up with CACS. And so we saw a lot of people that were teaching lectures and doing things like that. We've seen them at other conventions. Who is a few people you think, if you're going to be a professional performer, this is someone you should be aware of? This is someone maybe you should be watching or checking out their material.
As far as magicians?
And not just magicians. It could be whoever.
Well, I think, gosh, I love, you know, Mario the Maker is someone who I just think is just, I love his concept. I love what he's doing. He's got his family involved in his show. And I just think that He's got a great blueprint. Again, it's not something that anyone can copy. He's got a very unique look about him. And but I think what he's doing is spot on, and obviously he's making some good traction with, and what he's done is that he's done what I like to do myself, is that he's got the kids liking him, loving him, and the parents are loving him. You know, when you can get both of the parents and kids loving you, you're ahead of the game. You know, a lot of magicians, especially magicians that are doing like young kid parties, you know, the parents just kind of go, okay, this is good. We'll have what's his name there, and you'll do the show. And the parents are really not involved in the show, but I make it a point that they're involved in my show. But I think Mario is really one of the guys I like to look up to. As far as other performers, I mean, Justin Willman, who I've known for years, who is on, you know, Netflix, Magic for Humans. I think the joke is between me and a friend of mine, Joe Romano, if we could have anyone's career, it would be Justin Willman's, because he's done real well. But I have to remind people that even Justin, is with the success he's got now, I mean, it didn't happen yesterday. He's been doing this 20 plus years, and it's taken him time to get to where he's at today. So he definitely crawled to where he's at today. But yeah. I want to be Keith. That's what I want to be. You.
No. Hey, what about you mentioned birthdays quite a bit, but I know you do schools and you do libraries and things like that. What is the difference when you approach that market? You know, how do you approach thinking about your show and then as far as marketing to that?
Yeah. So again, I always look at my shows as almost a showcase. For instance, schools. Key, you know, I think going and doing a school show in assembly, if you was to just think about a performer going on stage at 8:15 in the morning and doing an 8:15 and a 9:15 magic show and being done by 10, that's kind of a crazy schedule, you know, and be home by noon if you're nearby. But, you know, just telling someone, hey, you know, I'm doing an 8:15 in the morning show is kind of unique. So I like I like producing these school shows. I like that kind of element. I love doing the family night type shows where I'm at a school where there's moms and dads and the kids, because it's, when I'm on stage and there's families and kids there, there's kids and the moms and dads, it's a way for me to showcase and push my birthday parties too. Or maybe it's a way for me to push, you know, the dad or booking me or mom for booking me for their corporate event. Libraries, same thing. You know, libraries, they need someone there. I think we as performers kind of think that the libraries were built for us, but there's an ultimate goal that we have to know that libraries, we're there to help them get kids in there to read books and to get circulation. And then that's it. They're not there just to say, to give us our summer jobs. And I'm very fortunate for 24 years, I've been doing the summer libraries. I'm very fortunate with those, and it keeps me busy when the school shows are down. And it primarily is Monday through Friday on that, so I don't have to really work on weekends. But again, I showcase myself during those library shows, and I push myself, because you know who's at the library shows is teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, teachers are off in the summer, and they're there with their kids. So if I could promote myself and let these people in the audience know that I do school shows, it's just another showcase. You're always showcasing for your next show, because in the old joke is, you know, you're fired after your last gig into your next gig.
What about your library show? Now, you know, we know that libraries have a theme every year. Do you remake a show every year for follow that theme?
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember one of the first themes that I put together was, and that's why I think you use them too. My crocodile puppet. There was a theme back in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, where it was the cartoon character was like a crocodile, and there was traveling, and he had like a little suitcase. So I'd reached out to Axtel and said, hey, I need your crocodile puppet. And I remember spending, I don't know, let's say $290, $300, whatever it was. And it was just going to be used for that season, just as more of a throwaway bit, just to say that I kind of wrote a material for their theme. And I did. It was kind of a traveling theme, and I wrote it. And come to find out, the croco in my show became so popular that the librarians made a request. Hey, is he coming back next year? And I went, well, of course he is. I had no intention of bringing him back, but of course they. So now the running joke is, hey, we want to book croco. You don't have to come. So he's been a part of the show ever since I wrote that first theme show back when. But I think having a theme gives me structure. You know, it gives me a jumping board on what to put together. You know, I remember we just did the space theme a couple of years ago, and there's always, I have the idea of how I want to put a show together with a warm up, with an opener, you know, or I need to put a helper here, silent act here, you know, so there's, the structure kind of stays the same, but it's just putting different effects in there to match the theme and push the different books that I want kids to check out. And ultimately just get them excited about reading. That's my number one goal in library shows.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, we talk about reading all the way through the show in the library and, you know, I'm an avid reader myself, so it's easy to encourage kids to read in the show and encourage them to be a part of the
Absolutely,
library.
But you know, the show's got to be, but the show's got to be fun too. I mean, I see that these librarians, they bring us in there. They bring, you know, when I see what we're up against, it's a magician typically against a reptile person. And those are the two people who bring in the bigger numbers at libraries. And they want, you know, that some of these libraries have to get their door clicked so many times in order to get funding. So they want a number of people in there, or they have to have so many books checked out for circulation to get different kind of funding. So a lot of these libraries, you know, require that kind of thing, and they need the volume of numbers to come in there. And it's just to get the kids to keep reading the summer when school's out too. Sure. So.
Sure. Now you mentioned Croco. I do use the same puppet. His name is Snapper. And I've had the same experience is when I arrive at place that I've been before, they're like, is Snapper with you? Is Snapper here today? Are we going to see Snapper? The guy is more popular than I am.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I'm not a vent. He doesn't talk, or he talks to me, or he doesn't talk at all. And usually he's just doing silly things like trying to eat my head, or you know, he's picking up stuff off the table that he shouldn't, you know, silly things. But I use him in my bubble show. He makes bubbles and all kinds of stuff in our bubble show. But the kids absolutely love the puppet.
I mean, one of the probably the problems I have is that when kids do see me at libraries or schools, and a mom will book me for their birthday, Croco doesn't come to birthday parties just because he's another case. So there is that kind of letdown when they don't see Croco at their birthday party. So, and it's just nothing I haven't fixed that because they've got my bunnies with me, but I don't want to start carrying another case into the birthday parties. And I think that makes it unique with Croco being that character that they see at schools and libraries. So that's part of my thinking, which may just mean part of my thinking is lazy.
I don't know. I do the same thing. He doesn't go with me to birthday parties and for some of the same reasons. But at my birthday parties, Bandit, my bunny, is the star. Everybody loves Bandit.
Right. And that's tough to use in the summer because I did take my bunny out one summer during my summer reading tour because I wanted to see if there was any reaction to it, not having a bunny. Did anyone react that Ken didn't have a bunny in his show? You know what? The consensus was there may have been three or four kids that said, hey, we're Snowball. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it was an easy summer for me, which happened the last summer that we were on tour. But it was easy because before I would have to smuggle the bunny into hotels, cover them up or something. Or if I went to eat, I would have to keep my vehicle cranked while I went to eat because I would get too hot. And you know that living in the South. So there are some advantages and disadvantages of having the bunny rabbit, especially when you're doing tours and on the road and stuff during the summer months.
Yeah. And we all deal with that. If you deal with live animals, that you have to be aware of taking really good care of them above everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
So what about, 20 years in the business, you've got clients that you've had for years. What are some things you do or have done to build a rapport and retain those clients?
Man, you know what's sad is that I'm actually seeing kids have kids. And that's when you know you've been in the business a while. You know, I'll go to these schools and there'll be this first grade teacher who, you know, is a beautiful girl. And she'll come to me with a Polaroid picture and she goes, hey, you did my birthday party when I was 8. And she'll show me an old Polaroid picture that we took. And, you know, it's like when you see those, it kind of hits you, go, my God, I'm old. Or, I've been in this a long time. But I, you know, my thing is that I've never treat my people like I don't know if I got this from somebody or if I made it up, but I like the word client as opposed to customer.
Yes.
When a person calls me, and they book me, they become my client. I don't consider them a customer, because a customer in my mind is someone who might just go in and buy something one time. A client is going to someone who's going to book you, refer you, book you again. They're a client, you know, and that's kind of how I look at them. And in most cases, they become friends. Mm-hmm. Some of these principals, some of these librarians I've known forever. They know, they've seen my girls grow up. I've seen their kids grow up, and we've become friends. So that's the kind of rapport I want with these people as I go forward, is I want to be enough. I want them to like me enough that they want to refer me to their friends or to their schools or to whoever they want. But, you know, going forward, I've got, like I said, there's parents that booked me when their kids were younger, and now they've got grandkids. So it's I'm starting a second generation in some cases. Mm-hmm. So I like that, you know, it's kind of like the, I get teased. It's kind of, I'm kind of the boy next door, the guy next door kind of character. They like me, and that's what I don't try to be somebody I'm not, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We take the same approach. Every first-time customer, we want them to become a client, somebody that we see repeatedly over and over again. But like you said, you look back now 2, 3, 4 years and have been in the same places at the same time. We've seen kids that are growing up, and I haven't been there as long as you have, but certainly want to be. What about continuing education? What kind of things would you encourage people to be doing? Maybe books they should be reading, websites we should be visiting?
As far as our profession?
Yeah.
Well, I you know, I've got a group of people that I hang out with, some friends that are in my little circle of people that I entrust. And if I'm writing new material, I bounce things off them. So I would first say, find you a group that you trust and you're not going to feel, you know, in competition with, but that you can trust. And this might be someone in another country. I've got friends in the UK who I talk to on a regular basis once a week, and might just be personal things, or might be, you know, business stuff. But find yourself a group of people that you can talk to, because if not, it's very lonely if you don't do that in this business. But yeah, I still think attending conferences is important. Maybe it's one a year, two a year. I think there's nothing better than going to a conference and not having to perform. I think, like this past week at CACS, it actually, you know, recharge me in a crazy way. It gives you a recharge when you go to these conferences. You can see things that maybe you didn't think of, or talk to a person, you know, late night while you're hanging out with a person and you didn't think of that. So I think these conferences are great, and I think they're still needed. But yeah, that's as far as books and stuff. I mean, there's so many different performers out there. You just got to find what your niche is, and then look around and see, you know, what you might want to learn and gain. Sometimes the things that I pick up are not even magic books. Sometimes it's just business books mm-hmm. from different people that are, you know, are not even part of magic, but I can use their information in my business. So I like to, if it's not about tricks or performing, I like to look in these other people's stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, we've mentioned conferences a couple of times. Conferences are certainly going to be coming back when all this gets over with. We've done some virtual stuff, and we're all anxious to be back in the live conference. But over the years, what are some changes you've seen in conferences? You know, one of the things that I've noticed, only, again, doing this for a short time as a profession, but it seems to me like there's not a lot of youth involved. And when I say youth, I don't mean just teenagers. I'm talking about 20s. 30-year-olds, the number is tiny in comparison.
Sure. Well, you know, and again, not to brag here, but I'll be coming in as the IBM president in July. I'll be the international president of IBM come this July, and then also running my own convention in Atlanta called Atlanta Harvest of Magic. I see these things firsthand, because I actually put the convention on for the Harvest convention. I also put the convention on for the IBM. But having been that person that used to attend conferences back in the 80s, I have to tell people that there really is not much difference from then. Back then there might have been 2, 3, 4, 5 junior magicians and, you know, a handful of, you know, guys in their 20s that were there. For the most part, it was guys that had full-time jobs. Maybe they're, whatever they did, they liked magic as a hobby. And that's still kind of what it is. I mean, you're going to get those conferences like Magic Live and Magi Fest who bring out the full-time people, but nothing much has changed. And we're working hard to get the the juniors involved, because I think the juniors, you know, especially with an organization like IBM, you know, it's kind of like the I remember going to a church when I was a kid, and it was an old church, so old that it literally just kind of people died out. And I mean that in literally that our congregation didn't get any larger because we weren't bringing any youth in there. And that can happen with organizations too, you know, so that's why we work hard to try to get some youth involved. But I have to remind people that say, hey, we got to get youth involved. I have to remind them that we need youth, but keep in mind that these 40s, these 50, these 60 year olds is what's been paying the bills for all these years. And they sometimes have more money and they can pay the bills. They're able to afford to go to a conference and spend $120, $20 a night for a room or a flight, where a junior may not. And with that, so what we do like at the IBM is that we are doing something where if you're a junior in, like, let's say a teen, we don't charge you registration. You just got to get there. And if you can get there and you got to be there with your mom or your dad, we're not going to charge you registration. The registration is going to be free. And I think that's a neat thing. It's a great thing that I think we're doing as a conference to kind of, hey, we know that juniors don't have money. They're not doing shows and stuff, but give it to them for free, because we do know that they're the future.
I want to be sure that what we do continues. I think we live in a world where everything is on a screen and live performances is fewer and far between. And I want to, you know, whatever we could do or I could do to help that continue would be a goal for me.
Yeah. And that's good. I mean, I think just introducing kids, like right now I'm teaching Discover Magic. It's what I do. And so I've got anywhere from 10 to 20 kids where I teach sometimes daily right now virtually, but used to be in person when we were at schools. But introducing these kids to magic and not just filling time for them so parents are working, but really giving them some content, some good stuff to lean on, whether it be life skills or some really cool magic tricks. And I'm very proud of Discover Magic and what they've done with it. And what they're doing with it. It's a great concept in what they're doing. And the kids are, like I said, learning some great things. And I hope it inspires them to do other things or to stick with magic going forward.
Yeah. For somebody that's listening and might not know what Discover Magic is, tell us a little bit about Discover Magic.
So Discover Magic was a brainchild of Michael Amar. He had an idea that he wanted to teach, have a real curriculum for magic teaching. Then some of the ideas that he wanted to do, he met up with a guy named Brian Daniel South and Michael Rosander. And they had some ideas, so they kind of collaborated and then kind of took it in a different direction than Michael Amar wanted to do, but he's still part of the team. But they really took this and made it, it's called Discover Magic. And you can go there, discovermagic.com, and look at it. But it's basically where kids meet up once a week. And they get a unique trick that they've made. It's not something that you can just buy at a shop. It's something they've made for their course. And right now there's four courses that you can take, and each course is like 8 weeks long. And each time it's kind of like a karate belt. Once you've completed your course, you get a karate belt. Well, same thing here. Once you're done, you get an orange wand or a green wand or a purple wand or you get different color wands going forward. And so kids can complete these different courses. But like I said, these kids are learning some great life skills, like just how to be a giving person, you know, how to be friendly, how to be humble. These type things are taught in the teachings, but they don't realize they're being taught this. They're learning these presentations, but they're actually learning these nice life skills. One of the things is that as kids learn magic, they can be the worst ones when they see a magician to scream, "I know that one," because they've been taught a few tricks. So if we can teach these kids that are in our classes, hey, to be respectful, not only when you see a performer perform, but when you see anyone speak or someone talking, always look at them in the eye. And because we do know that kids today are stuck on their iPhones and their devices, and sometimes to get a kid to look up, just to get eye contact is hard sometimes. So that's why I'm very proud of Discover Magic. It's doing great things.
Yeah, it sounds like great things. And I would encourage anybody interested in looking at that to go to that website, discovermagic.com, and check out exactly what it's about. All right, as we get near the close of this thing, Ken, I want you to think for a minute and share with us what you think would be the top three things that lead to becoming a successful performer.
Top three things. One is just to have a great product. I think back, and you could probably remember this, Keith, but when we would get these courses and people would teach us things, again, I think you've got to be a good marketer, but I think there used to be a particular lectures that I would go to, and they go, you got to have a good show. Well, I think having a good show is not enough anymore. I think we got to have a really great show. We've got to really, the product's got to be so much better than we can ever imagine it to be, because they're out there. They exist. So if your show is just mediocre, it's not going to take you far or far as you want to go. So I think always be working on your show. Don't become complacent with your show, but become the best you can be in your show. If that means learning new things from other people or whatever that might be, but just having the best show. But you know, you also got to know the marketing stuff too as well. You got to be a good marketer and try different things. Don't be afraid to try the different marketing things that are out there. At one time, sending letters or postcards to schools was, you know, the kiss of death. But now they're coming back around because they weren't mailing anything. So now that stuff's kind of becoming back. The mailing postcards is becoming a big thing again. So because everybody went to these postcards. Then back in the day, it was faxes. It was, you know, so we're always learning new things about the marketing stuff too. So what was the third thing you said, Keith?
That was it. Just three things that you thought.
Yeah.
That's so, two. Give us one more, Ken. You said have a great show and learn how to market.
Yeah. And I would say just know, I think to be successful, you got to know you can't always be on. I think there's got to be a time to push this work away because you're going to get burnt out. And I think if I've learned nothing more than before this happened, this pandemic happened, is that I was always working. I was so afraid that if I didn't work at it, I was, you know, my business was going to fold up. And you take for granted your families, your kids growing up, you know, as a performer, you do miss, especially if you're a birthday performer, if you have kids, you do miss those weekends when your daughter has cheerleading or gymnastics, or there's another birthday party because you've got to do shows. So, I would say treat it like a business, one that you love, but treat it like a business that's not open 24 hours a day. Set yourself up with some good goals and good time management where you don't have to be at it the whole time at your computer working or working on this. Take time for yourself. Take time off for your family. I think that's very important. I've had to learn that the hard way.
Mm, yeah. Great advice. Great advice. Now, a couple of things before we close completely is one is your website for your products is Ken Scott Products, right? .com.
Yeah, KenScottProducts.com, right?
And if you're interested in having a virtual studio, Ken has some help on there for you, both a PDF and a video. Tell us a little bit about that, Ken.
Yeah, so it was like, I think we shot this in July, and it was basically just to show you how one can set up a studio with, if you've got, you know, pretty good funds or you've got a shoestring budget. We kind of teach you both ways on how to set up some lighting, that are expensive lighting to lighting that you can buy at IKEA, and still make it work. We kind of show you those different things. And it was meant to be like an hour and a half and it ended up being like 3 hours, the workshop we did. So it's quite, a lot of content that you got to sift through, but it was good stuff. And I think everyone's like, Ken, you got to do a part two, because again, I've learned new things and we've learned new ways to do some technical stuff. And, there may be a part two, but right now there's just the part ones up there that's still some great content.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the gear sheet itself. The gear sheet is just all the gear I use, be a light board or, the different lights I use, the different microphones. I give all that out on a gear sheet and kind of show you the things that I'm using. Again, it goes back to my products. I don't want to sell anything on my product page that I don't actually use in my show. And that's kind of, if I haven't tested these microphones or different switchboards out, then I'm not going to really talk about them.
Yeah. Well, if you're interested at all in pursuing a virtual show, or even like I mentioned earlier, just doing something to put on your social media, short clips, that I would encourage you to check out that stuff that Ken has got on his site. Well, man,
now, Keith, aren't you doing bubbles or the foam now as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Had a great time with foam. The last 2 years we've been doing that, and summer is just wild with that.
Because I've considered getting into that, but I've always stopped short for no particular reason. Then I just can't imagine myself doing that. But hey, I'm always open to new things. And
great way to have someone go beside yourself. You know, you or I, if we're doing a magic show, we have to go.
Yeah.
But if we're doing foam, I have one of my sons who's doing that with us, and I don't have to go.
That's great.
I'm booked up for a magic show, but hey, we've got this other option. I can send somebody out with it.
So yeah.
That's another way to pursue that.
That's great. I'll probably get into that and calling you up about that and give you some ideas.
All right. Well, man, I have had a great time visiting with you, and truly appreciate you taking the time to do that, Ken.
Thank you.
You bet. Ken's stuff, man, I have used several of his products. I can't speak highly enough of what is on Ken's website. You will not be disappointed. Thanks so much, Ken, for being here. Had a great time with you.
Thank you very much. This is great.
If this is your first time tuning in, I encourage you to subscribe to the show so that you can hear all the great episodes that we have coming up in the next few weeks.